This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On Air.
I felt safe. And that was me speaking, you know, under occupation, like me seeing forces in the streets or them coming randomly to our neighbourhoods. I felt safe because no matter what, you would know that family would put you first.
Hello, everyone.
Takaho.
Selamat datang.
Konnichiwa.
Hola.
안녕하세요.
Assalamualaikum.
And kia ora.
Happy New Year, everyone. I'm very excited to be back in the studios today. We have Rinat Tamimi.
Kia ora. Hello, kia ora. Thank you for having me.
Our first guest of the year. I'm very excited to have you in the studios. You've recently been back in Palestine.
I have just come back from Palestine just before Christmas last year now. So, yes.
What was it like back home?
It was amazing. It was cup filling. I really needed to do this trip for myself, for my soul, to fill my cup. Well, the main visit was to see my granddad, who is still in hospital after having a stroke in Hebron. He is still in hospital, and so that was the main idea of the visit. But of course, it was to connect with home again, catch up with people, eat the food, aww, be with the people. It was amazing. So good.
I'm hoping today we can talk about your trip because you made a really beautiful Facebook post recently that really inspired me to just reflect on the concept of home and what it was like to be back home with your family, experience your culture,
yeah,
and also that feeling when you have to come back.
Yes, right? I know.
And January is such a transition month because some people are still on holiday, some people are back at work.
Yeah.
So let's explore that feeling together.
Yes, no, let's definitely explore that. Yeah, it's something I wanted to talk to out loud about it. So, yeah.
Yeah. For people who don't know you, Rinat, you are the host of the Watermelon Report. You're also a advocate for your home, Palestine, leading the rallies that we have here in Dunedin.
That's a great way of starting. Just Rinat, mum, a wife. I work in a call center in Dunedin. And I, advocate for my people of Palestine. And, the Watermelon Show is part of who I am as well, which is every Thursday on ORFM, 8:30 on ORFM and Wellington Access Radio. That's who I am.
Beautiful. Let's talk about your trip. I'm hoping that we can, you know, just share about what it was like, because going back to Palestine, it's different to going back to a different country, you know. There's more nuances and also it's not as easy to travel to as well.
No.
So what was it like to get there?
Yeah, a very good question. Because this whole time before, well, myself and the family were actually planning to go this year in April to go to Palestine. So all this time, we've been planning and thinking and, you know, this is the best month, this is not the good month. Mainly, I guess, after, let's call it a ceasefire, but we know it's not a ceasefire. But after 2 years of advocating and also what's been happening in Gaza and West Bank, we just thought that, you know, we need to be home again. We want to be home as a family. For me personally, I haven't been home for 9 years. So we're like, okay, yeah, so let's plan it for next year, blah, blah, blah. Then all of a sudden we get the news about granddad being in hospital. So mum had to book her tickets, go overnight, basically. And myself and the rest of the family were like, well, you know, we want to be with her. We want to support her. We want to be with the family. It's just a sign just to go home. To get to Palestine, fortunately, New Zealand is just so far away. So it's not just a one, you know, flight or two flights. It's multiple flights. There's a 16-hour flight between Auckland, whether you're going to Dubai or Doha first, and then from there to Jordan, that's another flight. And then the real test, I guess, or the real craziness of it is going crossing the border between Jordan and Palestine. So that's where all the anxiety kicks in. That's all where all the questions might come up, or, you know, you could be turned away at any point. Anything could happen for you on the way crossing the border. So that's crossing the Jordanian border first, then the Palestinian one. Jordanian, Israeli, and then the Palestinian one. And then having to take a car ride between the Palestinian border point, which is in Jericho in Palestine, to Hebron, which is my hometown. And of course, that way itself, it's going through other checkpoints and going through many different things that could, yeah, it's all uncertain. Mm. You could just be, it's all risky.
So multiple checkpoints to get to Hebron.
Yep, yep.
How far is it from the Palestine gate to Hebron?
Yeah, so we were really lucky. I think we made it there under an hour. But on a bad day, it could take you 3, 4, 5 hours because there could be like a the soldiers could just decide of closing the border or closing the way to the border or the entrance to Hebron or the entrance outside of Jericho. So it's really a mixed bag. You could face anything. But I think we were lucky that day that it wasn't that busy. But also, yeah, it took us less than an hour to get to Hebron, which was nice.
How was it different to the last time you were home, which was 9 years ago?
Yeah, very different for many different reasons. Last time when I went home, I had just graduated from uni. So it was kind of like the norm. You graduate, you go back home, you find a job. Back then, I went back with the family. I think it was just mainly mum at the time. And we were living in Ramallah, not in Hebron, because of her work. And I just found it really hard to connect back then. Our cousins, aunties, uncles, aunties and cousins and family, grandparents, they're all in Hebron. So we had to make regular trips every weekend to see them, or we had to make the trip to be able to see them. And I just didn't really, I just didn't connect. Mm-hmm. I think my mind was more here and building, you know, my career and future. And I just, I couldn't really find a job back home. I had a few interviews back then and just, nothing. But I think the main reason why this trip was more special is because of how much I realized that I love Palestine and how much Palestine it's precious to me and it's sacred. And I'm so happy I'm proud to be Palestinian. And I think I've always felt to be proud and I've always felt proud and happy and obviously proud of my culture and who I am. But the last 2 years made me realize that 100 times more. And so when I went this time, it felt like, wow, I won the lottery. I got to go home. I got to touch, the Holy Land. So
I love how you said it's like winning the lottery, like you get to go home.
Yeah, because I know it's a dream for others.
So thinking about your trip, when you reach Hebron, what was it like over there?
Yeah, so usually I'm used to one entrance to Hebron. And so this time we had to go through another entrance. So I had to ask the driver, is the other entrance closed now? Because even though I hadn't been home in 9 years, I still remember the streets. I remember the way. I remember everything. So I just realized how much the occupation has made just much more of a challenge and change to Hebron in terms of, blockage, the entrances of the city, just them changing everything around. So I think, so Hebron itself, nothing has really changed. Still the same streets, the same people, everything. People are building they're building new shops. They're trying to have, build new shops to get, because the economy is really bad there. Economy is just, there is no money coming in, no money going out. So people are just trying their best to live by every single day. So I guess I've seen new shops and new restaurants. places to eat and go and visit and, yeah, clothes shops, etc. But Hebron hasn't changed, which was – it was nice. Yeah, like I think what makes Hebron Hebron is the people of Hebron, how generous everyone is and how everyone's ready to give you their last cent because that's how generous and welcoming we are. Yeah.
I love that. You know, you're reflecting on the new places that's opened because it just shows the resilience in people.
Definitely, yeah. And the fact that not just work and everyday life, but I guess, you know, people going to universities, people going to schools, even though now there's so many school strikes because teachers are not getting paid, their salaries are being stopped and frozen by the occupation, or they're just getting 50% of their salary or 20%. But people are resilient. They show us that every single day, even though knowing that when you leave your house every morning, you might not come back. You might not come back. That was the reality we were living and have been living for years. But in the last 2 years, you can tell how much the occupation doesn't care anymore. They don't care. They're ruthless now. They don't care who they shoot. They don't care who they arrest because the world has shown them that, yep, you can get away with whatever you want to do. But even though people, leave their homes thinking they can't, knowing they might not come back to their families, but they still have to go. They go work, they go get married, they go get engaged. And people of Hebron, they're really good about their weddings and engagements and, all these celebrations, which, again, shows resilience and that life has to carry on.
That's beautiful. Was there a wedding when you were there?
Actually, my cousin was getting married. She just got married in Egypt, so the wedding was actually in Egypt. I wasn't there. My sister managed to go, which was nice. But it was, she had her, like, henna, like, bachelor party sort of thing, so which was really nice to be with family and just to have that sense of a celebration again.
Because that's a celebration of culture.
Yeah, no, exactly. So that was nice. But I guess most of their weddings happen in summer there. And when I went, it was the start of winter, so not many people like to have weddings and engagements in winter. But it was still nice to be a part of.
Just talking about like the seasons. So at the moment, is it
winter?
Winter.
Yeah.
How cold is winter over there?
So when we arrived there end of November, start of December, it wasn't that bad. It was like a nice 20-degree Dunedin day, which, like, for me, I found it really hot, and I was, like, in a T-shirt, and, you know, this is really hot. But others found it cold, of course. But towards the time that I had to come back, so around 18th of December, you could really tell it started getting really cold. So I think places in Jordan were expecting snow at the time as well. So it does get quite cold winter there. Yep.
How is your family? I'm interested to hear about their everyday life in Hebron.
Yeah, so my cousins, uncles, aunties, each of one of them have they've got a family. They go on with everyday life, whether it's work, whether it's university, whether it's school. As I said before, people get up every day and they've got something to do because it's part of who we are, and we don't want to erase our identities or anything. But it's, you can tell people are struggling, you know, financially or because of road closures, because of the occupation, imports, exports. Businesses are not really how they used to be prior to October 7th. Also, a lot of Palestinians used to work in like the Israeli side of Palestine, and that used to be a big source of income for families. Now, none of that is possible. They can't, you can't go and work there. So people have had to find other jobs to work and to do. Our family's doing okay, just day by day. Still happy and joking and just how I remember them from my childhood. grandparents are getting older. My granddad, who's in hospital, has had a stroke and just turned 87 on the 1st of January. So he celebrated his birthday in hospital. Unfortunately, unconscious, doesn't really realize what's happening around him. But we know that he felt us and he felt our presence. My other granddad is also, getting old. I don't know the exact age right now. Also my grandma, who is my mum's mum, she's married to my granddad, who's in hospital, is also getting older. And you can just, it's sad because it's life and it's part of life. Of course, we're all going to get old, but it's just, you can tell that age is impacted on their everyday living. And again, they're trying to get by day by day. Mm. Yeah.
And sometimes you just don't want to believe that they're getting older as well.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of like you just want to, it's like when you have something that you want to keep forever, but you can't keep forever because it's life.
Was there a moment when you were there that you just want to, just capture and remember for the rest of your life?
Yeah, I guess every second I was home was precious. For me, going home, as I mentioned before, it was like winning the lottery because, again, so many Palestinians can't go home, not financially or not because, of other reasons, but because they can't actually, by force, they can't go in because they've got a certain passport or they don't have a certain document to get them in. So for me, I was just appreciating every single second because I was so lucky to be there. So all the moments I was home, I think I would love to just have captured in my heart. Well, they aren't. It is in my heart forever, but it's just nice. Yeah.
Well, what were your highlights from your Facebook post that you made?
I will have to have a quick look and remember. I'll just a second. I knew this was going to come up, so I did prepare it.
It feels like a highlight reel of your time there.
Yeah, so I guess just being with my grandparents, so spending time with my grandparents, especially my granddad who's in hospital, showing photos of my daughter to my grandparents and family.
Beautiful.
So I actually took some actual physical photos to give them. Luckily, she just had her school photos taken, so I took a bunch of them with me.
So they haven't met your daughter?
No, so no one has ever met Leia from home because she's never, we've never gone with her. So I mean, this is the first time I go while having her anyway.
I love that you brought physical photos.
Yes.
This makes it more real instead of just, showing it off from your phone.
And the good
thing,
what happened was on our way to on our way from New Zealand to Hebron, long story short, our bags got delayed. So our big bags, so they had to actually, so our bags stayed in Jordan while we were in Palestine and we only picked them up on our way back, but the photos of Leia were in my handbag.
Oh, good.
So, luckily, so that was just, ironic how, it was good. So I took, photos, showed Leia to everyone there. And I guess, the highlights, I got to renew my Palestinian ID. I got to renew my Palestinian, ID card and also my passport.
That's the best time
to
be doing
really
it.
Good. Yes. And again, of course, spending time with family, seeing literally every single family member that I wanted to see. Going down to the old city of Hebron, where the Ibrahimi Mosque is, even though we weren't able to pray there at the time, mainly because someone that was with us didn't have their ID, so we couldn't just leave them behind. It was fine, but we still managed to go shop around in the old city, meet people there, and it was so nice because the old city of Hebron is just so special, so precious. You can tell how much the occupation has impacted the living there and the people. There were so many shops that could have been open, but they were closed because people simply can't keep up with the finances and, occupation, all of that again. So, yeah, that was really nice. And again, yeah, just spending time with family. The food was a big highlight.
Of course.
There's a post on my Instagram just of the food because, yeah, it was really good. Yeah.
Tell me about everything you managed to eat while you were there.
So people of Hebron were really known for grapes and grape leaves. So, and my aunties are really good at grape leaves. So, and by the way, we stuff our grape leaves with rice, mince, and, you know, spices. I wouldn't know them off the top of my head, but I think it's simple, like just salt and pepper.
So the rice and the meat and everything, you wrap it with grape leaves?
Yes, yep. So you wrap it in grape leaves and then you just, I don't know the way to cook it, obviously, because that's why I rely on people making it, which is nice. But I think it's just the grape leaves of Hebron itself are just special. Like even... Like, that's what I reflected on when I came back here. Like, every single thing you can recreate here and you can make in New Zealand. It's not like, you know, we don't have spices or the ingredients to make something. But back home, it just tastes different and it tastes authentic and it tastes like it is where it's from, you know? Where when you make it here, it still say, you know, it tastes the same, but not really the same.
Yeah.
So grape leaves... we also do it with cabbage leaves as well. So same idea, but with cabbage. Makluba, the upside down, which you know about. There's a famous Hebron dish. It's called qidre. Qidre, which is, it's basically rice and meat or rice and chicken, but it gets made in a pot that you kind of put under the, it's like a wood fire oven sort of thing. It's quite cool. Mansaf, which is another famous dish in Palestine and Jordan as well. It's basically just rice, meat, and on the bottom there's it's like the thin pita bread. We call it shrak bread, and the yogurt on top. It's the forgot the name of it now, but it's yogurt, some sort of a warm yogurt. Yeah, and just things from my childhood, like chestnuts. I mainly wanted to go in April because there's more things that I like that grows in April.
So you decided.
I decided on the month for many reasons, but of course didn't end up happening. So I had to obviously have what is in season there. But yeah, chestnuts, corn on the cob, really famous in winter there, like just in the streets. Dessert, so lots of knafa. Palestinians are very known for knafa. My cousins now make knafa at home, which is so cool and it's so yummy. And now I'm back to the knafa that you just buy from the shop and you heat up in the microwave, which does not taste the same at all. Dessert and food and drinks and yeah.
You were only there for 20 days. Yeah. How did you manage to eat everything?
Because it's just the thing when you're home, everyone has to invite you over for lunch. Yeah. So even though we had to be in hospital with granddad every day, you know, he had to have someone with him and also we wanted to be with him. But every day we were lucky enough to be invited at this auntie's house or this uncle's house or grandparents. And also I think because I was there for a limited time, I was like, I need to make use of every single day. I'm not going to be able to come every day. So
this
just really planned the time. And I had a list of things to buy, but also to eat and also to experience. So
you had a list of things you want to eat, right? If I go back to Malaysia, I never finish the list.
No, it never finishes. But I think I managed to finish what's on the priority list, let's put it that way.
Yeah. So you had your top priorities and, you know, your nice to have.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And we're so lucky to have so many, you know, family members there that were generous enough to have us over. And it's just the thing, part of our culture, you know, having people over for lunch and having dessert. And it's nice. It was nice, yeah.
Just thinking about your mental state while you were there.
Yeah.
How did it feel like to be with family, you know, in terms of your well-being?
I have actually never felt safer.
Wow.
I felt safe. And that was me speaking, you know, under occupation, like me seeing forces in the streets or them coming randomly to our neighborhoods. That happened because they're always searching for someone. I felt safe because no matter what, you would know that family would put you first, that you're always just wrapped in love and aroha and just your whānau around you. So I have actually never felt safer. Yep. Which, of course, made my mental health a lot better. Mm. And again, as I said at the start of the show, I think what we all went through, you know, everyone went through many different phases in the last 2 years, especially, you know, Palestinians. But for me, living abroad, living in diaspora, and I did this trip for myself, for Renard, for my soul, just to feel alive again. So that's how I felt. Mm. Yeah.
Because it must feel quite, you know, that distance between you and your home,
yep.
just watching everything happen
yep.
while being in New Zealand. And for the first time after 9 years, you get to actually be there.
Yep.
When you said you felt safe with your family, it just reminds me of how strong and how the people of Palestine protect their country.
Yep.
And, you know, they're not going to let the country go because that's home.
No,
they feel safe to do that because
exactly.
It's their home.
They're not going to let anything go. They all look after each other. They all, you know, if someone is sick, if someone's needing something, family always comes first. And, you know, we show that by example, by when this happened with Granddad, that was the first thing we wanted to do is to be with them. So it all just reflects the idea of home, whānau, being together, and getting rid of that idea of ethnic cleansing or taking our land away, or taking our identity away. Yeah.
What do they think about Aotearoa New Zealand? That's a really, you know, like at the opposite side of
yep.
the question is, what do they know about how we, like our stance with Gaza and Palestine have been?
Yeah, I guess I wouldn't say we talked about that much with family over there. And if it wasn't for us living in New Zealand, for them to know about, they would not know about New Zealand at all because you only realize how far away New Zealand is when you travel to the other side of the world and then looking back and looking on the map on the flight, you're like, oh my God, we do live on the bottom of the earth, which is so nice. I love being here. But people, I guess of the Middle East, they know of Australia more than New Zealand and they don't really know where New Zealand is or anything about New Zealand. Everyone actually talks highly of Jacinda.
Mm.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't blame why they have certain thoughts about her. But what they remember of New Zealand, which is quite nice because I guess of the whole Christchurch attacks and how she stood up for the Muslim community and all of that, which is nice. So a lot of them, they talk about Jacinda, they know who she is. Not so much of, I guess they know that the people, we always reiterate that the people of New Zealand are good and, you know, we had so many people in the streets and organizing things. Even when we were in Palestine ourselves, you know, there were still so many snap actions around the countries, rallies, etc. So not really, so they know to that limit. But I guess it's just, New Zealand is very far away.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And you only realize that once you're out of the country somewhere else.
And having to take like so many flights to get somewhere. Yeah.
Yeah. Thinking about well-being again because of how resilient your communities are back home, what are certain, you know, just cultural practices that you see them do back home that you want to just hold on to when times feel tough?
Yeah, I guess it's things that we do here too. Praying, going to the mosque on Friday prayers, which women don't really do. I know some women do it here and it's, you know, mostly on men. But, yeah, just that vibe of it, Friday is for family. It's for going to the prayer and then being with family to, you know, in the afternoon. Yeah, can't really think of many practices other than, I guess if it was Ramadan, it would be nice to enjoy and have Ramadan together with the family. And then, yeah, the Eid celebration after Ramadan and then Eid al-Adha. Those would be really the practices or what people would just being with family every night or, you know, having a cup of tea, for example. Tea's so big there, you know. Tea with mint. I like tea with mint. I don't like my tea with sage. Mera mia, that's not, I just, no. It's a big no for me. So I am a very mint with tea Palestinian girl.
So how do you
sure.
make it? Like, is it black tea leaves?
Oh, it's just normal, yeah, like black tea, like the Bell. We just buy the, yeah, it's the Bell brand, and it's just, yeah, breakfast black tea, that normal one.
And then you and add mint leaves?
Yeah, so for me, I just make, because, you know, I'm not back home, so I make it in a pot. There's no need. I just, yeah, you just boil the water, you add a tea bag, and then the couple of leaves and sugar. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you just pour the hot water on top. Well, I guess that's something. It's always just a ritual. Oh, and dark Arabic coffee. That's such a big thing there. I don't like it. I don't like the dark Arabic coffee or the what we call the Turkish coffee. I don't like either of them, but it's so big. So you have to have some if you're visiting someone. Like if it's not tea, it has to be coffee. But the other coffee I'm talking about, it's more of a, I guess, Saudi Arabian coffee. It's a stronger version of a normal Arabic coffee, which has lots of cardamom in it. Oh. And I know many people in Dunedin, if they've come to our events, they would have had that before. Yeah, and just having like, I guess, just the normal things that we would eat every day, hummus, olives. I'm a fake Palestinian. I actually don't like olives, so I have to say that. But yeah, just those little things that, yeah, are part of the culture and people. Yeah.
I love how everything we talked about today is really around family, food, and just being together. So yeah. That is the what brings you strength at yeah. a time.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. That would be the theme of the whole trip. Just literally, if I sum it up in one word, it would be family.
How does it feel to be back?
Sad. I feel so empty. Yeah, it's like at the time, so on my return flight, I was, you know, returning alone. It got delayed because of the weather in Dubai and so many things happened. And I was just so anxious and I was by myself. And I just, you know, couldn't wait to get home here, you know, to my daughter, husband, life, my house, shower, bed, all of that. But then a few days after that, I was like, oh, my God, I want to be home again. Just like just feeling sad. Yeah, just want to be home. It wasn't enough. It will never be enough. I don't think any certain time would be enough. But it also encouraged me, though, to plan to go home again. Yeah. And that it shouldn't be something weird that I'm going home or something different. But, yeah, it feels very empty and sad to be back because I want to be back home again. Yeah. And I think I'm mainly feeling that way because my mum and dad are not here. They're still there. So it's the main – and granddad is still unwell. So it still feels a bit not very complete, very yeah. incomplete, yeah.
The transition hasn't really yep. completed because half of your soul is still there.
Yeah, and I think the other reason, as you said at the start, it's a start of a new year, January, you know, just had Christmas, New Year's, stat days off. Your body was used to just days off, days on, now having to go back to everyday work life and navigate through this journey that I'm not on holiday anymore. So, yeah, yeah, it's been rough, yep.
Thinking about your travel to get here again, was it easier to leave or was it more difficult to go there? Just like the travel-wise.
You mean traveling-wise?
Yeah.
I think I found the Dubai to Auckland flight easier. And this is me speaking. I hate flights. I hate being on a flight. I hate turbulence. I like on the way there, I was lucky to have my sister and my dad holding my hand literally with turbulence because I can't do it. But I think on the way back, coming back alone just made me feel stronger because I'm like by myself and, you know, I have to be strong for myself and having things to look forward to come home to. I think the return was easier. It was more tiring, though, because you have to get up early in Palestine, go through to Jordan, had to wait till nighttime for my flight. And then Dubai had to be blessed with rain and thunderstorms the day I decided to have a Dubai to Auckland flight. So what happened was I had a layover in Kuwait. We got to Kuwait and we got told my flight was cancelled. So that actually got me to lose my New Zealand flight. We've just had so much drama. But it made me also realize again how far away New Zealand is. And, you know, people on my flight, their concern was to get to Dubai. But for me, I had a whole nother international flight, big 16-hour flight to get on. And then after that, Auckland, Dunedin, which we all know Dunedin and its winds and the landing in Dunedin. And I was that anxious, literally crying before getting on my, it was with Air New Zealand. And I was saying to the ladies, we have to get to Dunedin because I'm, you know, like just thinking of Dunedin and the wind. And we've had so many like bad landings in Dunedin. I just kept thinking, oh my God, I just wanted to get home.
It's
after
a really long trip.
I had left Palestine Thursday morning and got to Auckland Sunday night.
Wow.
So, and that all without, you know, sleeping and showering and, well, in Kuwait they gave us a hotel and stuff after 10 hours of being in the airport. But, yeah, it was just, so I guess, yeah, the return was somewhat easier in terms of maybe the flight, but maybe not the, yeah, I don't know.
I love how when you were there you wanted to come back as soon as possible, but then it took you a while to process, like, wait, I'm not there anymore.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Aww. So now that you're back in Dunedin, what are things you are looking forward to? Is there anything that you feel hopeful for?
Yeah, I guess just, you know, it's part of reality. New Zealand is my second home and it's where I live and it's where I see my future. It's where I see my daughter's future and, you know, safety-wise, no one can argue that New Zealand is not safe. Well, at least for me, safer than home in terms of, you know, future and stuff. But I look forward to connecting with people again. I look forward to advocating more for Palestine, telling people more about our culture and community. And we haven't really planned anything proper yet, but we will be planning things in the year, including the Rosanna fundraiser that my mum runs. We're hoping to be a part of it start of February. George Street Market. So we're hoping to be part of that. Just I guess self-reflecting and growing and taking it month by month and not rushing into things and, yeah, meeting new people, connecting with people again and, yeah, nothing major to get to look forward to, yeah.
Because the reason why this whole conversation comes up because I understand what it feels like to feel empty when you come back here, when you've just spent, like, weeks with your family back home.
Yeah.
What helps is to have something to look forward to.
Exactly, yeah, because with living there, it's just like, it was so busy. I didn't even have, you know, the only time I would have to myself would be at nighttime when you go to bed or early in the morning. But, yeah, just them filling in the whole day for you and just, I guess because I was there also for a limited time, I wanted to, you know, I was on a calendar and, you know, this day I'm seeing this person, this day I'm doing this. But it fills up your day so quickly and it's, I guess it's stuff that you like and you get used to. It's not just your routine, everyday life and, you know, work and so it does feel really empty to be back. Yep. And I keep looking at like the things I bought from there and which was nice, obviously, to bring stuff back from there. But that also reminds you of what it's like to be home or like the journey we took to go to a particular shop or like the journey we took to go to a particular place. So, yeah.
So all the memories are coming
exactly.
back.
Exactly, yeah.
What did you buy? What did you bring back home?
It's quite funny because the original flight I was meant to go on that I lost because of the delays in Dubai, I had two bags purchased, like two checked-in bags. And then for the new flight, because we had no other options and I needed to come home, it was just one 25 kg bag. So I actually had to make a lot of negotiations at the airport to be able to bring back two bags with me, including lots of carry-on and me like literally holding, like having to carry a bag full of stuff to not have it in my checked-in luggage. So that was a really big story back home because I kept on like buying things and not really
thinking.
Well, the first worry was that, you know, the two bags would not hit the 23 kg mark, but they didn't. They were fine. But then it was just a whole nother chaos and drama that, you know, I had to literally fit it all in almost one bag. And, you know, purchase another bag and, yeah, just costs that I wasn't really anticipating or planned. But to answer your question, what I bought, it was just, I guess, traditional clothing. So for me, for my daughter, like snacks that we had in our childhood. So like, you know, like bars and chocolates and things, nuts and spices. Had to bring back lots of spices, jewelry, merchandise like Palestine stuff, magnets, yeah, that kind of stuff. My laptop bag, so many things, which is nice. It was good. I was grateful to be able to actually bring back every single item with me. Also our cousins, like Tamimi family, we have a big ceramics place in Hebron. So lots of, ceramics that I brought back with me. Yeah, so like.
So you have a family business there?
Well, yeah, it's not really our like direct family. They're like cousins of cousins. But yeah, it is a Tamimi ceramics factory there.
What kind of ceramics?
Also like, you know, mugs and stuff that I can hang up on the wall. And if you were to get that shipped here, it would be so expensive. So it was so nice to just be able to go and buy it yourself. And yeah, like magnets for the fridge. And yeah, so it was really nice. Rings, bracelets.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Was it safe to bring the ceramics through your luggage?
It was fine. Yeah. I had bubble wrapped all of them. Well, Mum helped me bubble wrap them. And that was good. And they all arrived safely. Aww. Everything got through customs, which was nice.
Yeah. And that's usually the anxiety that you feel.
Yeah, exactly. But no, it was quite nice. And I mean, I didn't really have something to declare in that sense. So it was all just normal stuff.
Now that you're back from that trip, and that trip definitely sounds like it is healing your soul.
Yeah.
How do you stay connected with Palestine, just with everything going on, and also, you know, with your parents still there?
Yeah.
How do you try to, you know, just
keep
connected?
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it's been hard because you're not there anymore. So no matter what, and like, you know, social media and over your phone and video calls, but it's just different.
It's not the same.
No, it's not the same as you being there. But I guess now that I've been there and spent time with everyone and kind of like filled in the gaps, and now I know, like, it's kind of like, you know, what to talk to someone about because you've just been there and you experienced a certain thing with them or been to the certain shop with them. So we've been in touch over social media, but also with the time difference, it's not easy. I try and keep in touch with people, but it's just not the same.
Thinking about things people can look forward to in terms of, you know, the events and the projects that happen here in Dunedin to support Palestine. One of the things is your podcast, The Watermelon Report.
Yes.
Can you tell me what people can look forward to this year?
Yeah, I guess just more updates about Palestine, of course, but also more cultural aspects of Palestine. Might be interviewing some people this year about why they advocate for Palestine or what brings them to this whole movement. So if you're interested to be interviewed, let me know. Yeah, I guess that sort of stuff. But yeah, just to talk to people about Palestine and that Palestine is not just the genocide. I want to showcase more of it, of what Palestine is actually. Yeah, what Palestine is. Yeah.
I think talking about culture just makes it just beautiful.
Yeah.
Especially because people have one view of Palestine.
Exactly.
They only remember Palestine from the genocide.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's to relate it back to, because I know not everyone likes to talk about politics, which is fair enough. And the whole Palestine thing doesn't have to do with politics, but I won't get into that. But what I'm trying to say is, it's still a country with culture and people. So if you put everything aside, it's still, yeah, there's so much more to talk about Palestine. So people can look forward to that this year.
So if there is anyone listening who wants to be part of the movement in Dunedin this year, what are some channels you think they should look up to?
Yeah, so we've got on Instagram, there is Dunedin Palestine. They can also follow me, Renata Tamimi, on Instagram. There's also on Facebook, Dunedin for Justice of Palestine. Yeah, we do also have a local mailing list, so they could message me or one of those pages about being part of that mailing list, because we send like regular newsletters about what is upcoming and events and regular updates. Yeah, that's pretty much it. And of course, the Watermelon Report.
Mm.
Yeah.
I love how there's lots of different ways people can learn more about what's happening in the city.
Yeah.
Facebook group, Instagram, and also the Watermelon Report. Is there anything people should know about?
The pages or channels that I've just mentioned would be a good start, because that's where we would advertise things that, we're planning. I guess it's just that funny time of the year that, you know, people are still coming back from holiday, and we do appreciate that this was a special time for families and Christmas and also New Year. So, nothing in particular that I can think of right now, but we will be letting people know as soon as we organize something. Yeah.
Mm. And just reflecting on the whole conversation today, what did you not expect to gain from the whole trip?
Weight. No, I gained weight.
I feel like that should be expected.
That's just
though. Normal,
yes. I guess more resilience and more strength, because as I said, I hate flying and I hate being on flights, but you do it when you have to. And so that made me feel stronger as a person.
For someone who hates flights, I'm very proud of you for being able to fly alone, coming back.
Thank you.
Was that the first time you ever fly alone?
No. But I think when you fly and then you come home, you just forget what it's like until you go on a flight again and you're oh, my God. But for some reason on my Instagram now, all I see is like pilots and turbulence and basically pilots telling you that it's okay to fly. So pilots making it sound, so, you know, you create all this drama in your head and you're like, oh, my God, the plane is going to crash. But it's pilots basically reassuring you that, you know, they know what they're doing.
It's
so
good
I've
to
basically
know that.
Been getting all these videos on my, yeah, I think it's just the whole AI thing.
Yeah.
They just,
Instagram knows your biggest fear.
They
right
do.
Now.
And then you watch one video and then now you have hundreds coming up your feed, which is, so, yeah, I guess I gained that and just. I'm grateful to have been able to even attempt this journey. So it was, nice.
And I love that you can look forward to planning your next trip.
Yeah, and that too, I guess I gained just the idea and, just feel stronger about wanting to go home again.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it just gives you hope as well that there's something to look forward to.
Definitely, yes.
Rinat, thank you so much for everything you shared today. It all started from your Facebook post.
Okay. I'm glad that inspired someone. I just write and I don't know who's reading and who's seeing, and that's nice.
Yeah,
thank you.
Based on your comments and the people who, like, I'm sure you inspired more than one person.
Okay, good.
But yeah, it just reminds me of how, you know, just resilient the Palestinian community is. And I'm so glad that you get to share your experiences of being home with us. And I hope that, you know, you get some strength on, like, just surviving everyday life here again.
Yeah. No, thank you. Thank you for having me. And yeah, this is probably the first time I've talked out loud about my feelings since I've come back to my second home. And so, yeah, I look forward to sharing more and to what this year will bring us in Otago Access Radio and also Dunedin and life in general.
Ooh-hoo.
Yeah.
So if you want to listen to more of Rinat, Watermelon Report is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and oar.org.nz. Also broadcasting on ORFM on Thursdays at 8:30 p.m. It's also on Wellington Access Radio, which is super cool. Thank you so much, Rinat. We'll see you again next time.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Connecting Cultures Features on ORFM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.